This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctor Without Borders, is an international, independent medical humanitarian organization that provides assistance to populations in distress, to victims of natural or man-made disasters, and to victims of armed conflict. Observing neutrality and impartiality in the name of universal medical ethics. I find out more about this international organization from Beatrice Lau, who is the head of mission of MSF in Malaysia. Welcome, Beatrice. How are you today?
Good.
Nice to have you here. So I know that, you know, you have to your credit some 20 years of experience in both business and humanitarian sectors. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, how you got involved in humanitarian work.
Right. Yes. Well, I started learning about MSF or humanitarian work somewhere in 2004.
Okay.
So my background, as you mentioned, I used to work in the private sector. My background is in international business. But then after working in the banking industry for a few years, I decided to leave the private sector and put my business development skills into, you know, better use or try to make it a better world. Let me put it this way. So in 2004, I was working with another humanitarian aid organization. And I think we all remember during that year, that was the year when tsunami happened.
Yes.
I was helping this other organization with their fundraising.
Right.
And I was quite, of course, I think the whole world was quite shocked by the event. And the whole world came in solidarity in terms of trying to do something to help. And everyone was just trying to figure out what can be done. But suddenly there is this organization called MSF who came out with an announcement just a few days after tsunami happened and tell the world that, well, we have enough donations for tsunami. So if you want to donate for tsunami, don't donate it to us, MSF. Donate to other organizations. We do have other needs for our other projects around the world. And if you're happy to help that, we are happy to receive your money. I was very surprised and appalled by this kind of idea of how come there are people who would say no to money. And that triggered me to think about what is the why do organizations raise funds? Are there ethics around it?
Of course.
And how do organizations manage funds? How does an organization raise funds related to its principles, its values? And that triggered me to think about along these questions. And that was also the moment where I started my admiration and love towards MSF, I guess.
Okay, all right. And so, I mean, that was, oh my gosh, it's been like 14 years almost, isn't
indeed,
it?
Indeed.
Right. And I mean, how did you get your start with MSF? How did you make yourself known there?
Yeah, indeed. So after that kind of reflections, I decided that, well, maybe that organization that I was working with was not exactly right for me.
Sure.
And then a few months after that, I saw MSF was running a recruitment ad recruiting the director of fundraising.
Sure.
And that's how I tried my luck and that's how I landed with the organization that I've been in love with for the past 14 years.
Okay.
And it's still growing.
All right. So you started off in fundraising and then I'm sure you went on missions. You know, I was reading you have humanitarian work experience in West Africa, Central America, Central Asia, Southeast Asia, so many different places you've gone to.
Yes, indeed. So I worked for MSF as a director of fundraising for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think the gist and the crux and the soul of MSF is really in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I said, and that was also what triggered me to leave the private sector in the first place, is that I want to put myself in better use,
right,
to make it a better world. So I really wanted to be in the field and do the field work that MSF is doing. So I left my position and then I went through a very robust recruitment process and then I went to the field with MSF. I worked in Niger in West Africa. I was in Haiti. I also worked a few years in Tajikistan in Central Asia. And then now I'm in Malaysia.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, and talk to me a little bit about those experiences, you know. I mean, we will talk about recruitment later, but, you know, I mean, how did you prepare yourself, you know, for what you were going to see in places, you know, in conflict zones, in war areas, you know, how did you prepare yourself mentally for such experiences?
Well, I think to start with, organizations or work of this kind usually attract a certain kind of people, you know,
like yes.
it would not be the first time that you would be kind of interested in looking into contacts like that. So I'm sure my other colleagues with MSF, before they join MSF, they have also traveled around, they read about it, they're interested about these issues happening in the world. So that kind of mentally, you have that preparation. But of course, no matter how much you read, your experience in the field, or you know, the what you're going to see in the field is completely sometimes beyond what you can imagine.
Of course.
But in that sense, we're also good in the sense that MSF kind of also prepare us. First of all, is during the recruitment process, you will be tested in certain core qualities and competences. To make sure that, you know, this is the kind of things that you would be expecting when you're working in the field. Secondly, there is also very straight protocols in terms of security, in terms of ensuring the security of our staff, mm-hmm. which we have to abide
yeah,
to at all times. So there is also certain framework that can help us to kind of cope with the situation that we are in. Of course, also building sort of like a support network at home, like your friends, your family, how do you keep contact with them?
Yeah.
And also everybody has some sort of like a coping mechanism, like some people write diaries or, you know, they take pictures, they listen to music. You know, you do have to develop that sort of skills mm-hmm. that when you are in the field, you do have to cope with the pressure and the stress yourself. So mm-hmm. you do have to develop some skills around that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I guess MSF does provide also, as you mentioned, some form of training in these areas as well, you know, like preparation and yeah, because you're facing some terrible, terrible things and you need to be the face of calm and I imagine, you know, to help the people that you are there to help.
Yeah, there are certain, I mean, of course, most of the people who work with MSF, they all come from particular different professional backgrounds.
Sure.
I mean, we have, of course, doctors, medical nurses, surgeons, pharmacists, but we also have non-medical staff who can be accountants, engineers, you know, human resources specialists. So we all have our professional skills. But because of the context in which we are working,
yeah.
it's actually quite different. So there are certain skills that you might, or they might not be obvious, or they might not be needed in your job back home. So MSF does provide that kind of training, for example, in terms of how do you manage your team management in a multicultural setting. We work with 140 plus nationalities, you know, our yeah. international staff. So the cultural difference, how do you become cross-culturally sensitive, which is something that I think is maybe Malaysians are very good in, but it's not so obvious to other cultures. So, so you know, things like that, it's a completely different set of challenges. You might be a very good manager back home because you were working primarily with the same, a quite similar culture, quite similar values. But when you are put in a team with, you know, let's say 10 people coming from 10 different cultures, it's a complete different story. So we do provide trainings like that to help people to boost up some sort of other skills that they might not use that much at home.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And I just want to talk a little bit about MSF. You know, I mean, I mentioned briefly in my intro the your mission, but I mean, maybe you could expand on that. You know, what are the aims? You know, what is it that MSF stands for?
Right. So I think you did a very good introduction. we do, I mean, primarily we are a humanitarian organization, but it's also important to highlight that we are a medical organization. So we focus in addressing the medical needs in humanitarian crisis or mm-hmm. situation. We say that the assistance that we deliver are for people who are affected by, you know, for example, outbreak of epidemics, natural disasters, man-made disasters, armed conflicts, wars, and so on and so forth. And it's important to highlight how we deliver that. As you mentioned, we are neutral, we are impartial. But what do we mean by that?
Yes.
Because there are people who question, how can you be neutral, for example? But by neutral, what we mean is we are non-partisan. Let's say in a conflict situation, we don't take sides. We are not taking any of the side in the conflict. But effectively, we do take side. we take side of the patient, for example. So in a way, I think neutrality is maybe not the, the best word to describe it. Maybe non-partisan is. And impartiality, what does that mean? We actually look into who is most in need? Because there is always a certain coping mechanism when a crisis happens. Either the local government or the authorities or civil society or other aid actors, there is a certain response mechanism. So we don't need to rush in and just repeat what everyone is already doing. Mm-hmm. We try to identify where is the gap, where is the need that we can find or still left behind. And then that's where we will then intervene. This is what we meant by impartiality. We also decide our operation based on needs. Okay. So we have independent assessment. Like, we will not be told where we should look. We will go and say, hey, you know, we look at the situation and we identify that this is the group that will need help most. And we make sure that this decision is not influenced by any political, religious, or economical agenda.
Sure.
So that's what we call the independence. And I think another attribute of MSF is we are a group of, what we call is we are volunteering, but in a way, it's not like we are just like volunteers as in we're not paid. I mean, we receive a certain like minimal indemnity, but it's a group of professional people who put to use their professional expertise, but with a non-lucrative commitment, as in they're not using that their skills, which they can, of course, make a lot of money back home, but they're using this skill to help the population in need. So that's in some, it's how I would describe the mission of MSF.
Okay, all right. And I just want to expand on something you said, you know, the important part of Doctors Without Borders saying your mission, MSF, to witness human rights violations. What does that mean? What do you, when you witness something, and but you're also impartial, you know, so, and you don't take sides, you know, what does that mean exactly?
Right. So, well, to witness, in simple words, is just to say what we see, right?
Yeah.
And I think I can give a very simple analogy. For example, if let's say we see there is a baby in water. So, mm-hmm. so I mean, like for us as a humanitarian organization, the first thing is we save lives.
Of course.
So we will save the baby out of the water. But tomorrow I see the same, well, another baby coming down the water. Of course I will save the baby. But day after day, after maybe 7 days, 2 weeks, I see that every day, then I need to question, well, what is happening? Maybe there is someone systematically throwing babies down the water upstream. So it's not good enough for us to just stop in saving lives, as in just taking the baby out of the water and just close our eyes or not question what is happening in a bigger picture.
Yeah.
And we would want to, we should be curious. And this is part of our duty of care to say, oh, what's happening in a bigger picture? And if we see that indeed there is actually someone systematically throwing babies down the water, we need to think of maybe we should try to stop that from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we mean by sometimes through our medical actions or our engagement in a humanitarian crisis, we observe that there is a bigger issue behind contributing in creating this humanitarian crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And we do owe a duty to tell and to say what we see. I think in 1999, when MSF was being given the Nobel Peace Prize, our president at that time, James Obinsky, in his speech, he was saying that we're not sure that words can always save lives, but we know that silence certainly kills. So I guess this is what we see as, in French, we say it's témoignage. It means witnessing. And it has always been a founding pillars of MSF and it has always been an integral component of our medical action.
And I think that's wonderful, you know. I mean, it's wonderful that you are helping, but as you said, if there's something systemic happening, you know, and you can't put a stop to it, obviously you must do something about it, right?
Yeah, we do it in different ways. I mean, it's not like we can solve all the problems in
of
the
course.
World. I mean, there are different ways. Like, for example, you can engage with the party who is contributing it, be it, I don't know, any different parties or governments or authorities. We can try to advocate for changes. We can maybe also tell people who can have influence on these actors and say, this is what we saw,
mm-hmm.
and we think this is a problem. Please, you know, do something about it. Or in very extreme cases where it is a serious violations of international conventions or human rights, then maybe in those very extreme cases, we need to be publicly saying the breaches that we saw, we witnessed. So there are different ways to kind of make changes to the situation. Mm-hmm. But I guess the most important part is that being at humanitarian organizations on top of a medical organization, we're not just only trying to address, you know, the medical needs, but also, you know, this bigger issues behind the system, if that is the case.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, like if in an armed conflict situation, you would take both sides, even if it was a rebel, let's say, who you're treating. But if you saw something happening that needed to be reported, you would do that as well.
And that's what I meant by it's not entirely correct or precise to say we are neutral, because yeah. we do take sides. As I say, we take the side of the patient.
Yeah.
If there is any violations against the rights and the interests of the patient, we always want to, you know, speak up, you know, as in speaking up. We have, like I explained, there are different ways to do that, but we will not remain silent when it is the patient's interest that is being violated.
Okay, all right. I'm speaking today to Beatrice Lau. She's Medicine Sans Frontières Head of Mission in Malaysia, and we are discussing what Medicine Sans Frontières does, and we're going to find out how you can get involved if you are so inclined. We'll find out more after this quick break. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is the very lovely Beatrice Lau, who is the head of mission of Médecins Sans Frontières in Malaysia, and that's also known as Doctors Without Borders. We're discussing what the organization does, and also, you know, later we're going to find out how you can get involved. Doctors Without Borders appears to have two different missions. So one is responding, of course, to the immediate humanitarian crisis, but also providing long-term health care in undeserved areas. Is that accurate?
Well, I guess some people also see it that way, defining our actions in terms of what we call so-called short-term and long-term.
Sure.
So looking from the duration point of view, it seems like it's a bit confusing. Like, what are you doing? But how we normally articulate it is the way we see ourselves is we are looking into filling a gap after a disruption of equilibrium.
Sure.
So in any system, you walk into any country or any place, there is always a certain equilibrium in place. And then something happened, for example, a natural disaster happened, armed conflict broke out, epidemic broke out. Then there is a disruption of that equilibrium.
Sure.
And therefore, there is a gap. Now, this is where the humanitarian need will arise. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean the MSF will immediately go into it. But like I said, there is always a certain possibility or capacity or resilience in the system on the ground. So either the government itself can kind of get back or restore the equilibrium. There is a civil society on the ground. There are other aid actors. But in a massive disruption of equilibrium or in a massive scale, the crisis happened, then the gap might be too big.
Right.
And there is always still some needs left behind. And this is where then MSF will then go in.
Okay.
Now, usually that is more like an emergency situation, because maybe very quickly, after 3 or 6 months, the equilibrium can be restored or get in place, then we are no longer needed.
Mm-hmm.
But in certain situations, such kind of disruption of equilibrium can be a choice of political decisions or policies. And that leaves maybe a more chronic gap behind.
Mm.
And in those cases, maybe our role or our engagement or intervention in a situation like that can be a little bit longer. So that's why you see that, oh, sometimes we are going in a short-term basis, sometimes we're going in a much longer engagement. But after all, it is our aim to try to fill the gap in the equilibrium.
Okay.
But we are trying to help the system to restore to that a new equilibrium, may it be, but we're never aiming to be part of that equilibrium, so to speak. So we're not there to replace, for example, the responsibility of the government,
mm-hmm.
For its public health, responsibility. We are not there to displace the civil society. There is always a role for them to play, but we're there to help. maybe temporarily, be it that temporary moment can be a few months or a few years or even a decade, but we're there to temporarily help to fill that gap until the system can get back to a certain equilibrium point.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that involves a lot of diplomacy as well, isn't it? And is that, I mean, as a medical organization, you know, how do you, I guess, do you have certain people who deal with that kind of diplomacy areas that need to be tackled as well?
That's pretty much the job of head of mission.
Okay, there you are.
Because I think, first of all, we need to be able to represent our organization. Although we work in 70 countries around the world and we existed since 1971, there is a certain understanding, awareness of MSF as an organization. But there are also places where MSF is less well known. Mm-hmm. So we can't take it for granted that, as in, we call ourselves Without Borders, but in the reality of the world, there is border. There are governments, there is,
of
like,
course,
sovereignty, and there are certain system and legal and compliance, you know, and regulation in place. So in a way, as you rightly put it, we can't just come in and impose. Yeah. So we have to be able to cultivate the kind of understanding who we are, what do we do, how do we do our work, and to create that kind of acceptance and the agreement that, yes, please, we do need help. There is a certain gap here. Please do come in and fill the gap. So it is through a certain diplomacy, through negotiation, through cultivating understanding that we can do our work.
Okay, all right. And I mean, as head of mission, you know, what is your personal motivation, you know, to do this work? I know you wanted to make a change, right? But has that remained, you know, that you just want to keep making a change?
Yes, I guess, fundamentally is, and it could be the same for many people, is that I guess we all want to be useful.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that is the main driving force for me, that I want to, you know, I live my life. I don't know how many years I will be, you know, living on this planet, but I do want to make use of the days that I have to be useful. And it has always struck me quite profoundly is the gap in the social justice that, you know, I'm seeing created by perhaps, you know, the political system and economic and many other things that are happening in the world. And I'm not to say that, you know, I'm here to save the world, but it's just that I would like to see a world that there is a more balanced in power, mm-hmm. That there are, you know, the marginalized, the underprivileged, people who are in need. If we can, more of us or some of us can help and do something for them, there is a more balance of power in the world. And in my mind, that is a better world.
Okay. All right. I mean, that's wonderful, you know. I mean, doing what little you can, right? In that sense, you know, we can't change the world, like you said, but whatever we can change, let's try and do something in that area. Can we go back a little bit to, you know, some of the emergency situations that you were in before? I mean, what sort of dangers and risks are associated with serving with the MSF?
Mm. Like, for example, my mission in Haiti, that was in 2010, and it was during the time when there was a cholera outbreak. Mm-hmm. So, of course, first of all, when you work in an epidemic situation, there is, of course, the challenges and the risk of, you know, you being yourself being exposed to the disease or the outbreak. Secondly, I remember it was also the time after the presidential election. So there has been a lot of unrest, protests going on. And there was also generally an anti-NGO sentiment amongst population. So it was quite a tense situation. There is always limitations on movement. There is the risk of kidnapping. And it's just generally unsafe. So facing insecure situation is quite common in our work because we do work in conflict zones, in maybe post-conflict zones. So insecurity is quite a common theme. In that sense, I think people who want to work with MSF should be prepared mentally to be okay or to be able to kind of sacrifice a certain personal freedom and comfort and are willing to abide by the security rule and to volunteer themselves in this kind of hardship and to be in a situation where it's not entirely safe, you know, globally. Mm. Having said that, me personally, I've always felt very safe working with MSF in the mission, like I mentioned, because there is quite a good and solid security protocol that we need to observe. As a head of mission, for example, I am responsible for the security and safety of all our staff. So we have to be constantly monitoring the situation, assessing and reassessing the situation. We need to change and devise our security protocol and make sure that it adapts to situation that unfolds. So with that, then I've always felt very safe. I've never felt like, you know, I'm in danger. Of course, the overall environment of where we are working is insecure.
Of course.
And that is something that maybe different people have different appetite for. So this is maybe one of the questions that people need to ask themselves, you know, how much risk am I willing to take? Do I feel comfortable with? And then you can decide, you know, whether you are you can work with MSF or whether there are certain contexts where MSF work that you probably would not want to work in.
Yeah, because, you know, I was reading on the website for, you know, if you want to work with MSF, it's a commitment. It's not an adventure. It's not, you know, just a job opportunity. You're going to make a lot of sacrifices as well. And you don't know exactly what toll it's going to take on you, right, until you're there.
Yeah, I think because, well, to start with, generally speaking, a mission with MSF lasts between 9 months to 1 year.
Okay.
Of course, there are certain situations where maybe certain profile are needed for shorter period, like surgeons. I mean, they can go for example, between 8 weeks to 3 months. But then generally, it is a period of time that you will be away from your comfort zone or your life that you feel very comfortable with. You'll be away from your friends and family, away from your job, and be in an environment that is a very minimal, maybe primitive living condition.
Yeah.
You are facing with insecure situation day in, day out. Quite a stressful work situation, quite heavy workload. So it is something that is, you need some preparation mentally and physically that you are able to, you know, cope with. And or perhaps it's something, an experience that you would like to have. And bear in mind that during the situation, like you rightly put it, it's not that for us to just to go and take a local experience. We do expect our staff to put in their professional best. I mean, of course, as much as possible, given the situation, because the situation is not very resourceful. So there are definitely limitations. But we do also want to make sure the quality of care and the assistance that we deliver is of a good standard or the best standard that we can afford. So you do need to work very hard and deliver the professional expertise that you have in the first place. So together, that makes it quite a stressful job indeed.
But, you know, once you're in the field and I mean, you've been there, let's say, you know, missions can last for up to a year, right, for example. I mean, you would have access to support as well, right? I mean, you yourself.
Yes, we do. Well, first of all, we do have a very good support system to make sure that our staff who are being deployed overseas, they can have access to, for example, psychosocial support. Mm-hmm. There is a unit in our back in our headquarters. They can have psychologists or counselors who are always there.
Sure.
To help and provide the support needed. On the ground, we also make sure that we have managers or mentors or coaches who are available to help sometimes just for the transition period of how do you translate your skills back home, or you probably just, it is the first time that you're working in this kind of context or in a multicultural setting, and there are certain challenges that you are not used to.
Sure.
And you are maybe having some challenges. So there are some sort of this kind of support as well. We do also provide training, like we just talked about, to help people. So there are certain different support mechanisms in place from the system that you can you can rely on.
Okay, all right. And I understand that MSF is actually having a recruitment initiative in Malaysia at the moment. I mean, tell me about that. What options are available? If anyone's listening, how can they help? How can they get involved?
So I, as far as I know, there are actually currently 24 Malaysians who are actively working with MSF in our mission countries. And there are doctors, surgeons, pharmacists, logisticians. So like I mentioned, actually 53% of our staff is actually medical profile, including all sorts of like nurses, paramedics as well. But we also need non-medical. So it's not like, oh, you work with Doctors Without Borders, but I'm not a doctor. Can I work with you?
Yeah.
Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. We also need other professional, like I said, accountants, administrators, engineers, logisticians. So you're welcome to come and join us. I would suggest that the best way is to go to our website and to take a look at the requirements and the challenges. We normally request someone to have at least 2 years of professional expertise or experience in their professional field, which I think is really quite a bare minimal, because indeed, once you are on the ground, not only technically you need to be very good, we also need to be a good manager as well. So having more life experience and more experience in your professional field does help a lot. Next, we also need to be tested on various competences and skills. Like I said, for example, language skills is important. English is the basic minimum that we need, but we normally need one more languages, either in French or Arabic or Spanish. That would help a lot. Or the ability to learn languages is also very appreciated. The ability to adapt to different environment, cross-cultural sensitivity, handling and coping with stress and pressure. How do you work in a team? Mm-hmm. Whether you will be able to function effectively and efficiently in a resources limited setting, because I mean, many of us can be very good when you have everything you need.
Yes.
But what do you do when you only have 60% of what you need? How do you prioritize? How do you make sure that you pick the right thing to, you know, to work on? How do you keep yourself still being efficient and effective? So those are the skills and competences that we are looking for, and throughout the recruitment process, you'll be tested on that as well. So if after considering, we mentioned about, you know, your coping mechanism, will you be able to be away from your family and friends for a certain period of time? What about your job back home? How do you arrange that? Your personal finances and so on and so forth. So after considering all these factors, if you still feel like this is something that I want to do, then you can also fill out the application form on the website, and then it will go to our HR department, and then they will try to match with the need that we have in the front line. If your profile does fit into that, then you'll be invited for the recruitment process.
Okay. All right. So I think everything is explained on the website, right? All right. Thank you so much, Beatrice, for joining me today. Any last message that you'd like to leave us with?
So I think first, I really look forward to you. If people there are listening who can and willing to join us and work in the front line, please do come and join us. Go to the website. And if currently you say, well, maybe I'm not ready for that yet, you can still support MSF. Please follow us on our social media, on Facebook. We have a Twitter account as well. Follow us. And also, maybe you can also consider donating to us, because like I mentioned, our independence is very important. Mm-hmm. The reason why we can do the work how we do it is because of the financial independence that we have. 96% of our funding globally comes from individual donors, just like normal people. Mm-hmm. And that gives us the independence to say that we are free from any of the political agenda, religious agenda, or economic agenda. So making a donation to us is actually one of the best way to support the work of MSF.
Okay, all right. And I suppose to donate, I mean, we can find out how to do that on the website as well?
Yes.
All right, excellent. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Beatrice Lau. She's MSF Malaysia's head of mission, and we were discussing what the organization does and how you can get involved. That website, if you'd like to find out more, is msf-seaasia.org. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.